This episode brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
This is At The Turn. It's time for discussion and interviews about the world of golf you won't hear anywhere else. Here are your hosts, Nick Heidelberger and Joe Simons.
Hello, hello. Welcome into another episode of At The Turn. Nick and Joe with you. One of us got thrown off of a golf course. And it wasn't me. Nick, what do you have to say for yourself?
I was... escorted off the grounds. Not really escorted. I'm being dramatic. Escorted. But I will tell you guys and ask for your opinion on who was in the right and who was in the wrong when I got kicked off of the University of Idaho golf course, where I am a season pass holding member.
Not only a season pass member, but that's your town, baby. You dropped the Heidelberger name in Moscow. Doors open for you. They usually don't close. So I'm very excited to hear this story.
Yeah, I was just short of giving him a "Do you know who I am?" But you know, it just didn't sound good in my head, so I just left.
Ever heard of Vandals Soccer? A reminder to please rate and review the podcast. Have you ever been thrown off of a golf course? Please let us know. Alongside the 5 stars that you give us in either Apple or Spotify. Nick, with that, it is time for the Handicap Reports brought to you by Blue Tees. Looking for the best rangefinders in the game. You can't be dialed in if you don't have your yardage dialed, and you could be dialed with Blue Tees. Use promo code TURN at checkout for 10% off the most accurate rangefinders in golf. You want to lead us off, Nick? Are you continuing to plummet?
I've dropped once again.
Oh my God.
My index is now 19.4. I'm at the point where I can't keep shooting 93 in lowering my handicap.
Oh no.
I've gotten rid of all the really true, nasty, ugly stuff. And now I've got to take my game to the next level. Like, I came into the season at a level above where I was. I got rid of all the crap. And now I need to get it to the next level again if I'm going to keep this trend, which is a good kind of segue, because later on we're going to talk about mid-season adjustments and kind of where we go from here. And I'm at that kind of turning point where right now I've done the easy work. Now I've got to do the hard work. 19.4.
I'm very excited for you. Once again, Nick, I'm a single-digit handicap. Thank
you. Oh, good.
The Lord Jesus.
Man, nothing motivates Joe to work on his golf game like a double-digit handicap. 10.1 index, and he's just grinding away.
It's so true. Yeah, look, it's not that much of a single digit handicap. I'm a 9.7. That is a single digit handicap. When people ask me, I can say a 9. You always round down.
Of course.
We're never rounding up. No, certainly not. Yeah, I shot a 78 at a really difficult golf course. I was kind of lighting it up on the front, and I hung on for dear life. Nick, I know we've had this eternal debate in this podcast about good bogey versus good birdie. You should have seen these bogeys that I was pulling out of my keister. It was spectacular, especially on 18. I pull my tee shot left. I try to punch out. I hit the bottom of a tree well. It goes straight up and straight back down. So I'm lying too in the trees, like 220 out, needing a double to break 80. And I'm like, holy shit, am I actually going to gag this away? And I hit a pretty good 3-iron. It scoots. It was a dry day, so it scooted to the right side of the green. It was short-sided next to a bunker, and there was a tree overhead, so I had to hit like a low, like skipper out of the rough. And when I tell you, it was like the best chip I ever hit in my life. Came out perfect, rolled it to 5 feet, and I had a bender from right to left. And as soon as I hit it, I knew it was in the back of the jar for bogey, and I just fist pumped my 78. Let's go. It was one of those rounds where it was literally Memorial Day, actually. And we teed off at like 7:30. And it's one of those rounds that if you play well, you're like, oh, I'm so happy I woke up early. Everything's great. But if you like grind out a 97 on a holiday and it's slow, you just feel so terrible about it.
That hole alone is such a grind, and I'm so happy that you had to do that to make bogey on an important score, on a, you know, to break 80, to get back to the single digits going into the Corner Club Open, which, like you just said, it's next week, which is just absolutely blows my mind. But like, I'm glad that's where your game and your head are at. Like you're going to need to pull a few of those out over the weekend. So let's go.
Well, all it was, like, my game is exactly the same. Like, I'm hitting about 8 greens around. I'm hitting like 6 fairways around. Instead of my typical 32 putts, I had 26. And I mean, that was the only difference, was I didn't miss a putt inside of 6 feet, and that turned my normal 83 into a 78. So kids, work on your short game. That's all that matters. Nothing else matters. My wrist feels terrible. My swing is a mess, but somehow I'm breaking 80, and we'll see what happens when I go to Idaho. Should be a lot of fun. That was the Handicap Report brought to you by Blue Tees. Nick, I had a calendar reminder pop up on my phone for June 1st. You know what it said?
I'd love to know.
Masters Ticket Lottery. The lottery is open. You have from now until mid-July. If you don't apply for Masters tickets, you have no one to blame but yourself. Usually I'm speaking sort of to the audience and a little bit to you, Nick. I would say that the scales of justice are tipped a little bit differently here today. That's mostly for you. Apply for Masters tickets. We'll work out the details. We'll work out childcare. We'll figure it out. We'll figure it out. But just
true.
Apply for some Masters tickets.
Okay. I'll do that. I'll get on it. Totally.
Okay. I'm just going to text Ashley, tell your husband to.
Yeah, she'll be real motivated.
It's all over it.
Make sure I put that application in. I'll do it. I will.
Good. Without further ado, please, I need to know how you got thrown off the University of Idaho golf course.
So ever since Ashley and I have brought children into this world, I've been searching for the ideal time to play golf. I really haven't found it. And the answer is, there is no good time to play golf when you've got 2 young children at home and, you know, a million responsibilities that you're deprioritizing so you can do this selfish thing for 5 hours. But the quest continues. And whenever I've been a member at a golf course, from when I was single, didn't have any responsibilities, to, you know, a parent of 2 with all the responsibilities in the world, I've always liked to get my golf out of the way early. Back when I was playing U of I, when I was first learning how to play the golf, I would tee off at sunrise because it was a lot quicker. Back then, like, I was so bad, it was like, there's less people, it's less pressure, I can just go out and play and be done by 8 a.m. and it's all good. When I was a member at Hemlock Ridge over in Massachusetts, you know, before and after we had kids, I'd still like to play at sunrise, get it done. Maybe I could play golf before work and then start my work day. So I thought, all right, I'm back in Moscow. Got U of I golf course. The sun's coming up at like 5 a.m. here. On Memorial Day, I went out. I teed off at 5 a.m. And I'm like, great. I talked to Ash, like, hey, I'll be home by 8:30. You know, the first couple hours you'll be alone with the kids, but, you know, watch some Paw Patrol. No big deal. We'll be back. We'll have a day. You won't even miss me. So I'm playing. It was the most beautiful 90 minutes of golf I've played all year. The sun was just perfectly shining. There was dew on the course. It was not another soul out there. Birds chirping. I hit a tee shot, and I just have to describe this to you. I hit a tee shot on number 3. So it's going into the sunrise, and it was perfectly straight. It was just like a silhouette of a golf ball on a sunrise over like a dew-stricken fairway with not another soul out there. And I was just like somehow able to feel all of those elements all at once while the ball was in the air, and it was euphoric. I was like,
oh, magic. God,
it was magic. It was like so good. So I play 9. When I'm on like
real quick, yeah. That low key, the tee shot on 3 might be one of my favorite sneaky shots on that golf course. I just love it. It sets up well for a fade. You can miss anywhere in the world to the left. I just always, it's usually downwind. That's what, you ever get a tee box, folks, where you stand out and you're like, this ball's going to go 600 yards right now? Like, there's no way you can't hit a perfect tee shot. Like, that's one of those holes to me. So
it is a great tee
totally
shot.
Understand.
It's a great driving hole. Yeah. So about the 8th hole, the maintenance crew is starting to come out there. You know, you see the shed kind of, hear some ruckus over there, some mowers starting up, which it's all good. Like, that's that's part of the morning game. You wait for the lawnmower guys, you know, they kind of tip their cap, whatever. I've done this a million times. No big deal. Ninth green, I'm in the fairway. There's someone mowing the green. So I eat a snack. I packed, you know, 18 holes worth of snacks and drinks. So I'm standing on the fairway eating some chocolate chip muffins that were supposed to be for my kids. The lawnmower man, my first sign that something was not quite right is he mowed, finished mowing. He didn't put the flag back, which did not bother me whatsoever. Like I didn't care. I couldn't care less, but it was just like, was he just thinking like, rather than getting off my mower, this guy's about to play the hole. He'll put the flag back in 7 minutes and I don't have to worry about it. Or was it, you know, this guy shouldn't be here. I'm not going to do anything to accommodate him. So
at this point, you're not considering that I've made a boo-boo.
No.
Okay.
I've done this a million times this golf course and other golf courses. I'm just like, all right, kind of weird, but no big deal.
Okay.
I hit my approach shot. It's like 20 feet from the hole. I go up and there's another man behind this lawnmower man, right? Who's kind of seems like more of a head honcho. I don't know who these people are.
So none of these people, you have no interaction with the maintenance crew like prior to this, like you don't know who's who. That's
correct.
They're outside of your purview, outside of your world.
Completely.
Okay.
So I go up, I walk up greenside, I park my cart, I grab my putter, and the guy pulls my ball off the green and tosses it to me. And I was like, thanks. And he's like,
you said thanks?
Well, yeah, he was in like another machine, like about, like looked like he was about to do something on the green. And
got
I'm
it,
like,
got
you
it.
Know, like
sure,
you know, like, I'm totally cool to wait, like whatever. And he's like, you got to leave. You can't play here. We don't allow people to play before tee times. And quick side note, what time do you think tee times start at this golf course?
At U of I,
on a holiday on a weekend.
6, 7.
That would be totally reasonable. 8:30.
Oh no.
You can't schedule a tee time before 8:30 a.m. on a holiday on a weekend.
That's crazy.
It is crazy. So he's like, it's our policy, you know, no golfers out here before tee times because like we're out here doing work and people don't know what we're doing. So he asked me to leave. I told him I'd mark my ball, or not mark my ball. I told him I would fix my pitch mark, and he's like, no, yeah, I got it. And
no, son, I got it. And then you recessed. And so he didn't let you finish nine.
He didn't.
Did you consider asking?
No, not at all. I mean, he picked my ball up off the green and gave it to me. Said I can't play there.
It's pretty goddamn clear what was going on.
I wasn't trying to finish my putt. I wasn't gonna make the putt. I wasn't gonna three putt. I put myself down for a par. It was 20 feet or 15 feet or whatever.
Sure,
it was all good. I told him, I was like, look, man, I'm not trying to like piss anybody off. I'm just trying to play before my kids are awake and try to like make it fit into my days. Like, I get it. He was nice. And, you know, it was very cool. You know, he was like, I totally get it, man. It's just our policy and you can't do it.
Okay. Like, I mean, look, I do think that is a little bit crazy in terms of what time tee times are available. But I'll say this. If you are at a place like a University of Idaho golf course, school's still in session in May? It's not, right?
No, school's
Memorial
out.
Day. Maybe I'm a little bit understanding because the college kids aren't around. If school ended in mid-June and college kids were around and it was a holiday weekend, that first tee time's got to be 7. But if there's not a lot of people on the golf course and it's a holiday, I kind of understand the greenskeepers not getting to work until what, presumably 6:37?
Yeah, probably it was a little before that. So I teed off at 5. I finished at 6:30 and I started seeing them, you know, on the 8th. So probably like 6. They probably got there at 6, you know, started firing up the mowers, stuff like that.
I mean, look, I think it would be a much different story like in Portland if that was the case. Like, so I play Memorial Day also, and I teed off at 7:30, and they had tee times as early as like 5:28. So in a densely populated area with a lot of people that are trying to play golf on a golf course that's going to be full all day, yes, I think it would be crazy if it was 8:30. But University of Idaho, a little more sparsely populated, especially during the summer vacation for, you know, the people that make up most of the population of the town. I kind of understand. So your reaction at the time, it seems like you were maybe a little bit fired up. Kind of understand. Now that you've had a week or so to kind of decompress and think about it, does it make more sense or do you think it's bullshit?
I mean, I'll back it up a little bit. I was definitely not fired up at the time. Just kind of disappointed. Like,
annoyed.
You know, yeah. I'm not too surprised, but it's just like, it's just kind of dumb in my opinion. Like, it's just kind of dumb. Like, you should be able to play golf. And like, if you're courteous of the maintenance crew, like, it shouldn't be a problem. The problem is, which I get, is a lot of, number one, a lot of players probably are clueless and don't know what's going on and either hit into them or expect the maintenance crew to yield to them at like 6 a.m. And that's ridiculous. And that's probably what caused this. And it's just, I worked at the University of Idaho and I worked in athletics. And one, like, as an employee on the inside there, the thing, like, one of the most annoying things is like the sense of entitlement from like the community and the people that support your product. Like, I worked in athletics and like you go to a basketball game and just like random people would think they could sit courtside because they've always done it. And there's just like, they expect things that are like ludicrous. And I feel like that's the biggest reason why I was just like, look, I get it. I'm not trying to piss anyone off. Like, I'll happily go because I don't want to be that entitled outsider. Like, I own this golf course. Like, I paid $900 for a pass. Like, I should be able to do whatever I want. Like, I'm not trying to be like that. But if the golfers could be courteous, like, there's no reason for this to happen. The course, and you'll probably notice this, Joe, maybe you have in the past, it's definitely elevated and they're taking an elevated, like, operational approach to it. Like, there's just, I played on like a Friday afternoon and there was a starter on the first tee. Like, there was no tee times within like 45 minutes on either side of me. What? And there was a starter on the first tee. You know, the course is in great shape. It looks great. They're charging more money. They're doing more, you know, events and, you know, beginner clinics and things like that. So they're just kind of elevating it, which overall is a good thing. And I think this is just kind of part of that. Like, they're trying to act like, you know, a championship course and a more, you know, robust facility. And when you do that, you kind of stop letting the scragglers tee off at 5 a.m. whenever they feel like it.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's difficult because, sure, you want the golf course that you play on to be the nicest version of that golf course. But I know when I went to school just 8 miles away from Moscow, the town that we're talking about that has the Corner Club open and all of that. When I was in college, there was a 9-hole track that was much less than what U of I was when I was there, right? Kind of what I'm used to. So they replaced it with a like legitimate championship golf course. It's where Brian had his U.S. Open qualifier that we talked about. Like, it's that caliber of
regionals
golf course.
Has been there. Pac-12 championships has been there. Yes.
Legitimate, like, really, really nice, beautiful golf course, which is awesome. The flip side of that coin is you can't just walk out there with a 6-pack of beer, no shoes, and no shirt with your music and have a good time, which I may have done a time or 20 when I was in college at this old 9-hole Pullman course. So, yes, it is great that they're taking the time to invest a lot of resources and sort of elevate everything going on at U of I. But, you know, when you saying it's a slippery slope is the wrong way to put it. But you know what I'm getting at? You lose a little bit of the romance of the dirtbagness that you come to love with a certain facility when you elevate it too much.
Right, exactly. And I honestly feel like, and I haven't talked to anybody within the facility, but like the presence of that course in Pullman of Palouse Ridge is kind of like pushing Idaho. Like, they're trying to be or to match Palouse Ridge, which, again, it's a great course. So it's great aspirations. But I think there's an element that we're losing of like that, like, kind of Muni vibe, even though it's not a Muni, but just the Muni vibe.
Yeah, if I can, this is a little bit of a tangent, but sort of on what you're talking about. I just have to give kudos to what's going on with the City of Portland courses right now. It has been extremely noticeable. Talk about an elevation. Eastmoreland, this course that I've been shitting on for years and years and years. I've played it twice this spring. The best shape I've ever seen it in. The greens are rolling really, really well. The pace of play, most importantly, is quick, which it's never been. Rose City, Heron Lakes, all the facilities in Portland. They're doing a fabulous job. They got a new website that's really easy to book. They instituted this thing, Nick, where you can get on a waiting list. So if you just want to, like my buddy Shane wanted to play with us 7:30 Memorial Day, but it was booked. There was no room for him. He got his ass on a waiting list, found out that morning someone dropped out of our group, managed to sneak into our group like 7:30 Memorial Day. Like the next tee time was like at 6 p.m. There was no way he was going to get on the golf course. But you can sign up if you're in the city of Portland and you want to play golf on a busy Saturday and you're a single, you're going to be able to get out. You put your name on a list. They let you know a tee time is available in an hour at this golf course. You drive out there. You have yourself a great day. So kudos to whoever's doing all of this with the city of Portland. I'm sure it's a joint effort, but it's been really, really fun to see. And as someone who has played these golf courses for a long time, plans to live in this city for a long time, it's really nice to see because it's not impacting the green fees, at least not yet. So I hope that continues as well. But kudos to everyone at the city of Portland. It's a city that gets shit on a lot by people in the town and everywhere else. So whenever something good is happening, I feel like it's important to call it out.
Good on you.
Rant over. Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to make some mid-season adjustments, and we're going to win the Corner Club Open. We'll be right back.
This episode brought to you by Progressive. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity. Much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save over $775 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the home gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $779 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states.
Okay, Nikki. Mid-season adjustments. Now, I don't know if I really ever think concretely to the point of like, all right, I'm in the middle of my golf season. I need to take stock of what has happened. I need to look at the goals ahead and figure out how to close that gap. But I hope that we can sort of do that today together. Is this something that you typically do, or is this going to be a new thing for you as well?
It's something I typically want to do, but to be honest, my season has never really gone like the last several golf seasons have like not gone according to plan. Like this one is going according to plan. So now I think like this is baked into the plan. Like, okay, like I said before, I've kicked out the low hanging fruit. I've gotten that off. I've improved, but now I need to go to the next level to make those next strides. But usually it's like, I plan on doing that. And then I start getting worse and worse and worse. Then I'm just kind of in panic mode and spiraling. And I'm
what do I do?
Freaking out. Probably because the last like 6 years I've been playing at 5 a.m. every time and I'm like hardly awake and not ready to play until the fourth hole. And by then it's too late. So yes, I'm glad I'm at a point in my season where I can make some mid-season adjustments.
Well, we talked about using statistics in the past to help determine areas of strength and areas of weaknesses. And, you know, I don't do the Arcos and all that bullshit, but what I do is I've been entering all of my stats in the GIN app for 4 years now. So I have quite a bit of data in there, and it's really interesting to see my perception of where my golf game is versus reality. For example, this is the best putting season I've had in 4 years. Doesn't really feel like I'm putting better, but this is the best putting season that I've had in 4 years. This is the best par five scoring I've had in 4 years. Conversely, I'm a disaster on par fours. I'm like at a 4.9 on par fours right now. So I'm averaging basically every time I stand on a tee box and I make a par, I'm almost a stroke better than in my average on a par four. That's not a good place to be. But that's really interesting information because what that's telling me, Nick, even though it's not breaking it down, is my approach game is not where it needs to be. I'm not hitting enough greens. My iron play isn't where it needs to be because I'm hitting the same amount of fairways, but my par four scoring is higher. So to me, that's what that means. And that's why I was at the range before we logged on here. I was working almost exclusively on my irons. So I feel like that is the area that I have to dial in, is getting on the green more quickly because my putting is so good, and take advantage of a strength, right? Turning that weakness into a strength. So that's the mid-season adjustment I'm trying to make, is, and it's tough because I'm always a big proponent of strengthening your strengths, right? And so it's not like I'm not practicing putting, but my weakness is my iron game right now. So that's really where my focus is in the middle of the season.
Yeah, you definitely have more to gain by strengthening your weaknesses than strengthening your strengths. I mean, you want to maintain, if it's a strength, you'd hate to see it become a weakness, but you've got a lot to gain by making your weaknesses, you know, average to above average. Mm-hmm. So I like that. For me, my approach to this is, the first thing is, like, take a look at what my goals were. We talked about our goals at the beginning of the year. And am I doing the baselines that I said I was going to do? And there's one thing that I said I was going to do that I'm not doing. Oh. that is having a clear impact on my game. I'll paint a little picture for you. The other day, I was playing golf. I was standing on the 13th tee, 9 over par. And my playing partner, Matt Voorhees, started talking about, the 13th hole is like this, you know, force carry par 5 if you want to take an aggressive line. And
what did that idiot say?
He's like, oh, like, you know, you're hitting it good today. Are you going to go for it? I've been laying up on this hole because I can make a 5 or a 6. And every time I try to go for it, I've blasted out of bounds. You know, like, oh, you're hitting it far. You're hitting it good. You're, you know, whatever. Well,
and if I may, just to interject even further, I think because you're a lefty, it behooves you to take the safer route, because it is a severe dogleg right to left where the fairway almost runs perpendicular. So you can play just a nice soft banana ball out there and have 270 in, and you're never going to make a double from there. But if you float your tee shot trying to cut the corner a little bit, you run out of room and you go out of bounds. So it's a much more difficult tee shot for a lefty than a righty if you're trying to cut the corner.
Yeah, and it's really not hard to clear the stuff. The
problem
is it's kind of the hole is shaped pretty weird, because it doglegs pretty hard to the left, but then the green kind of doglegs more off to the right. So Correct. It's really easy to go through the fairway and be in the trees, and you're like, I just hit a great shot and I'm still punching out. So there's really, it's be pretty precise. Anyways, I just haven't been going for it, and I still didn't go for it, but it got me thinking about, like, standing over the ball, I'm hitting like a 6 iron off the tee. Like, should I be hitting driver? Should I be hitting this target? Should I be more aggressive? Like, he thinks I'm hitting it well. I better hit this one well. Instantly just hit that one out of bounds. And then my reaction is, the worst thing you can do is hit your layup shot out of bounds. Anyways, it's a long way of saying I make a triple on that hole. I three putted the next hole. The hole after that, I was like 96 yards, but I was in the rough, and I let a pin, like, my strategy was like, always play to the yardage towards the back of the green. You're way more likely to miss short than you are long. But I talked myself into, like, oh, this is a great lie out of this rough. I can hit like my 95 yard club and be perfectly good. And of course the rough grabs it. I'm 20 yards short. I'm short sighted. You know, I make a
disaster.
Another double yeah. there. Three putt the next hole. Top a tee shot on 17 out of bounds. Anyways, suffice it to say, my mental game fell apart. My score fell apart. And what could have easily been an 86, 85, 87 turned into a 93, where I played the last 6 holes, 12 over par.
So what was the overarching thing that you were supposed to do that you didn't do? Just basically
work on my mental game.
Yeah.
I came on this show in January and said, I am committed to a season long mental game, like mental regimen, not just reading the 15th club on June 1st in preparation for this tournament, which I'm going to do, but like actually practicing it 12 months of the year, which I did for like 2 weeks, and I haven't done in a long time. But I think there's room to grow in my mental game, and I don't think it's too late. There's still 5 months left in golf season for me to take control of that aspect of my game. So when I'm having a good round and I'm trying to fight these thoughts of like, you have something to lose, like, I can overcome that and play good golf for 18 holes instead of 12 holes.
Yeah, I find that I am falling into the same trap, Nick. I've probably had 4 or 5 rounds where if I just would have played normal down the stretch, I'd probably be like a 7 right now for my handicap. It's just a lot of I've let a lot of good rounds get away. And to me, it comes down to a thing that for some reason this is so insane to describe, but I was thinking about this yesterday. I have a swing thought that it is undefeated. And when I use it, I always do it well. And I shit you not, I never think of it on the golf course, like ever. It is so bizarre. And it's, first of all, the swing thought itself is hilarious. You know what it is? It is swing good, not hard. Those four words help me play golf so well because I'm not actually probably swinging any slower, but to me, all that means is like tempo or rhythm or whatever you want to say it is. And I have a very like, I have a couple of shots that I call upon that I remember hitting. One of them was at the Corner Club Open last year. I don't know if you remember, but my tee shot on 8, I pulled out a driver and I said swing with rhythm and passion, which was basically a version of this. And I made the best swing maybe of my life. I hit like a 2-yard draw, like into a very narrow window, and I made a birdie and got on a little run there for a while. And when I can have that thought of swing good, not hard, I find myself just playing really well. I have a bounce in my step, my posture is like everything's better. But for some reason, I can't get that in my head while I'm playing a round of golf. I've toyed around with the idea of writing it down, putting it in my wallet, writing it on my hand, like making some sort of calendar reminder on the phone. I've taken no action whatsoever.
You can do, and I don't know if this is your personality or not, but you can do a GPS reminder on your phone. So when you get to a location, your phone will ping your reminder. So like you set it to whatever golf course you're playing, roll up into the parking lot, and it'll pop up and say swing good, not hard.
That's all that's really all I need. Like, and even if I'm playing well, it'll reinforce that action. If I'm playing poorly, it'll get me to revert back to what I need. It sounds simple, but that really is all and I was thinking that at the range today, and I hit some quite nice shots and like, okay, do this on a golf course. Figure out a way to take this thought, take this energy and bring it to the golf course. So that is one of the biggest things I'm going to try to do the back half of the season is worry less about mechanics, more about setup. So I'm trying to be all about what I do before I hit the ball. Let the swing just happen and only have a thought that has nothing to do with mechanics. That's what I'm trying to do is I've played golf for 30 years. I know how to swing a golf club, right? Just let the basically set up, have a good positive thought, and then pull the trigger and see what happens. Because I've seen enough this year positive to know that I have really good rounds of golf in me, like shooting in the 70s. And this is what happened last year about this time, Nick. I was basically in this spot. I went to Idaho. I had that, you know, pretty typical round, but I was putting well. I made 4 birdies. And I said, I feel like I'm going to break par this season. And literally the next round out, I shot 1 under and I got down to, I think about like an 8 or a high 7 last year. And I feel like I'm approaching the same pattern this season, if I just sort of stick with it, but make this little tweak, perhaps I can have it be more elongated rather than just a couple of rounds.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's a good swing thought too for a field player like yourself. So just do it. I'll try to remind you. I'll probably forget too, but you know, we'll be sitting here in November and December saying, man, why did I just do it?
We're on the verge of the weekend. We talk about the other 51 weeks, and all we got to do is like remember 4 words, just a couple things to tell each other, and we're going to be fine, and somehow we're going to be incapable of doing it. All we're going to do...
We're both sitting here acknowledging that we're just completely going to completely forget this one
piece of information. All we're going to do is eat like 4 slices of pizza at your house, drink about 6 beers, and start talking shit to Romy, and then play pad the next day. That's what's going to happen.
We're not going to forget to do that, that's for sure.
So
the other thing, I have one more thing on mid-season adjustments. So I think it's well documented. I've increased my distance quite significantly this year.
I'm crushing it.
The golf ball.
Yeah.
I'm crushing it and it's in control. Like I'm not hitting it off the planet. My misses are not off the planet, but still not hitting a lot of fairways. Left roughs, right roughs in play, but you know, not down the middle. And the last round out, that round where I was, you know, had a great position to shoot around in the mid 80s until my brain fell out.
Shut up.
I was Voorhees. Using a fairway finder. It wasn't Voorhees' fault.
I know, that conversation did happen,
but it was all on me.
And by the way, I'm sorry. There's no fucking way he's getting into the Corner Club Open. He thinks Zero. He's just going to roll up to the bar on Friday and be like, all right, Mark, we're here. Like,
yes, exactly.
Insane. Okay.
Yeah. Sorry. Go ahead. I went to a fairway finder with my driver. So basically I hit driver 14 times, but every time I choked quite a bit down, like an inch and a half, 2 inches down, and just made like the most balanced, controlled swing I could make just to kind of see what would happen. I didn't really lose that much distance, a little bit, but every single one was a controlled fade. I hit 6 fairways. The few that I missed were like, you know, a yard into the rough, completely in play. And that's a shot that now that I kind of have seen it and know what it's going to do, I feel like I can choose when I'm just going to go full swing, you know, and bomb it as far as I can, and when I'm going to go controlled, you know, 265 fairway finder, which I feel like I'm never going to be out of position with that shot. So that's an adjustment I've started to implement. I'm going to build on that. And I think that can really help keep things on the rails when I need to. Like, perfect example, 18, I go into this hole. I'm like, there's no real good place to miss. There's out of bounds on one side. There's hazard on the other. There's two really narrow fairways with thick rough in the middle. That's like a 45 degree angle that if it bounces off there, you're screwed. But I've been watching this shot all day. I know exactly the shot shape it's going to be. So I just stood up there. It's the most confident I've ever been on that hole. Pulled the driver, smashed it, got it out there. Was like 1 yard into the rough, but had a mid iron in and no problem. No chance that ball was going to go anywhere except for perfectly in play.
Nick, that's great. There's no better feeling than setting up to start your ball with trouble, knowing that your swing is consistent enough to deliver it back to the exact target you want it to be at. I'm very happy that a fairway finder is part of your repertoire now. Who gives a shit about distance? I'd rather be 250 center cut than 280 underneath the tree, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Fabulous. Okay, well, look, I see no reason why we shouldn't take first gold gross based on this conversation. It's just a matter of us being able to remember the things that we need to do to succeed at the Corner Club Open.
If we can do that, we're unstoppable.
We're unstoppable. That's really the only people that can beat us in the Corner Club Open, Nick, are ourselves. Okay, that's where we are right now. And with that, it is now time for the Mad Golfer of the Week. It's brought to you by Piper Golf. Use promo code TURN10 at checkout for incredible savings off incredible golf balls. Nick, did you know the LIV Golf Tour is still going on?
I was pretty sure that was happening.
Yeah,
they're pretty sure.
And they're playing a golf tournament this weekend, as it turns out. They're at the Golf Club of Houston. Robin Sykes is our Mad Golfer of the Week. Robin played Golf Club of Houston. Hear what they had to say. Quote, as we're pulling up to the starter shed, we're greeted with, by the way, cart path only. By chance, we had 6 waters with 2 men. Later, this will be crucial. No cart person on front 9. No problem, we thought, as we pulled up to the halfway house. Saturday, it's bound to be open. Nope, closed. We scrounged around and found a water hose and filled water bottles.
Then we all got sick.
2 days later, we were in the hospital. No. Okay, back to Robin. Okay, so they got a hose and filled their water bottles. Great. Entire back 9, no cart person. Thanks for ruining my 65th birthday party with my sons. Oh, my God. One had to quit playing as he gave up his water to his younger brother who had heat stroke.
I love this. Sounds like they're on Oregon Trail in like the 1700s, 1800s.
Died of dysentery.
I know. Like, oh, someone's Charlie's got a heat stroke. Could you give him your water and just head back to the parking lot?
Robin Jr. didn't make it. Got heat stroke. All right, back to Robin. One had to quit playing, gave up his water to his younger brother who had heat stroke. We're from Houston and we're used to hot golf, but didn't anticipate the no water, no service on a $130 per man luxury course. We'll never return. I will make it my life's mission to tell every golfer I see about your service on my 65th birthday. So not quite what kind of golfer they are, but very proud and disappointed that on their 65th birthday, they had to go to this dipshit golf course with just dirty water hoses available. And poor Robin Jr. is passed out in the parking lot.
That's one of the best visuals, because I always like to like play the movie of what this person is describing in my head. And like the person passed out with a heat stroke. They're like, no, you go on without me. I mean, it's just, it's perfect. But honestly, Robin, yeah, if that's all true, that's pretty shitty.
No, that's definitely bad. I mean, no water in the heat of Texas is an issue. Congrats, Robin. You are the Mad Golfer of the Week. And with that, it is now time for Nick Rolls, brought to you by Matchstick Golf. Use promo code TURN20 at checkout.
Joe, as you and I speak, and tomorrow, as people are listening to this, this will have happened yesterday, but the U.S. Open final qualifying is happening. 10 of the 13 final qualifiers. And what we're going to do is we're going to go from 687 players, and we're going to whittle it down to 44 participants in the U.S. Open. Oof. This is a great day for golf because it's when you get like the Alexes of the world, who I described in the Brian Romey recap episode, like who make it through. You get those guys playing with like the Jason Duffners and the Sergio Garcias of the world, like major champions, like Hall of Fame career caliber players, Stuart Sink, these PGA Tour guys who don't have an exemption, but they clearly could compete. And then you get them mixed in with like the up and coming, like college players, like the highly ranked amateurs who are our future pros who are going to be out there, all of them competing for U.S. Open spots. A quick list of the guys who are competing today, who may or may not make it. Patrick Harrington,
Patty Ice,
Ryder Cup captain, multiple major winner, Blades Brown, teenager from Tennessee who may have made a cut on the PGA Tour recently. Adam Scott, Masters champion. Sergio Garcia, Masters champion, who did not make it. He's already failed to qualify. Joel Damon, everyone's favorite Netflix actor, failed to qualify. Mark Leishman, Jason Duffner, Daniel Berger, Stuart Sink, all of these guys competing with the Alexes and Romeys of the world, trying to earn a spot in the U.S. Open. It's super cool and should provide some good content on the internet as you're listening to this.
Longest day in golf. Yeah. So this is happening right now as we record on Monday, right?
Yeah.
Joel Damon, I mean, boy, that was pretty busy. I mean, he finished tied for 10th at the Canadian Open yesterday, Sunday, and he's already played a round of golf that was not good enough to get him in the U.S. Open. That is an exciting 24 hours for my man, Joel.
Yeah, that's one way of putting it.
And that is Nick Rolls. Okay, well, U.S. Open preview coming up next week. Nick, we talked a little bit before we started recording. Nick did a fun piece about the 99 U.S. Open, everything that surrounded it. So we'll talk a little bit about that. It's the 25th anniversary of it. One of the first golf tournaments I really remember like being glued to live at the time. So that should be a lot of fun to talk about. We'll pick our U.S. Open winners. And then the following week, we'll have our old buddy Dane Delgado will come back on to talk about mid-season burnout. Dane is not in that category. Things are going great for him over at Matchstick Golf. They're opening a brick and mortar location in North Portland. So we'll talk about that as well. Congrats to Bob McIntyre, the lefty. Nick, I don't know if you watched any of that yesterday, but I'll assume you didn't. It was
you do know.
Yeah. He had his dad on the bag. I was a blubbering mess afterwards watching. It was like such a cool moment because, boy, if you want to talk about someone who was trying to steer it into the house, my guy had a 5-shot lead with 6 holes to go, and all of a sudden his playing partner kept rolling in birdies, and he had to sweat down the stretch, and he got it done. It was very emotional because his dad was in the bag. I also did pick him at 71, so that was actually pretty fun too. So, yeah, pretty tasty stuff. My cut of money taken care of. Thank you to the McIntyre family for that. Yeah, so we'll pick our U.S. Open winners. Anyone coming to mind not named Scottie Scheff right now, Nick?
I'll save it for the pod.
I love it. Don't give these people anything for free, Nick. Yeah, make them tune into the next episode. Appreciate you all for listening. Make your mid-season adjustments. And remember, Write down your swing thoughts or set a GPS reminder to alert you to the proper swing thought. What is it, Nick?
Swing good, not hard.
I'm Lacey Evans. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time at The Turn. We'll be right back.